This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Claw up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rainbow! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC has escaped the Groundhog Day existence and has ended the Helton era.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rain of Troy Radio, episode 425, coming to you on Monday, November 15th. This is a huge mailbag here as we look back to a sudden bye week and look forward to USC and UCLA locking horns at the Coliseum this Saturday in a big rivalry game, one that USC needs if they want to start thinking about going bowling. We're going to answer your questions and so much more here in this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, wherever you can find a podcast, we are there. Our email address is rainoftroy@fansided.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC,
Second What's Brewing Show.
I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joining along with my co-host, Alicia Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back with a mailbag episode, in which this might be our biggest mailbag in a long time. We have a ton of questions that we've gotten over the last week or so. Last week, we finally put out that episode that we wanted to, in which we went down every single coach, potential coaching candidate that USC could theoretically look at in the coaching search to replace Clay Helton. People enjoyed it, which is always good to see. A couple of things to correct, like Chris Richard, I said he was the defensive coordinator of the Cowboys. No, he's the defensive backs coach of the Saints.
He was.
Yeah.
He was coaching for the Cowboys.
Yeah, he was. Sure. Yeah.
And
at some point.
Yeah, and we had a couple of people suggest some names that we didn't talk about. I think Dan Quinn was one of them that would be interesting.
We didn't talk about anyone currently on the staff either.
Yeah, and frankly, that there's a reason for that, but the thing about this coaching search is, and we said it in the podcast, like they could go out and hire somebody that we didn't talk about.
Right.
Because there are an infinite number of names when you get down to it. So we just tried to sort of focus in on the ones that we've heard from whatever sources, not sources, just people throwing out names. And I think we've mostly covered the big ones. There will always be guys that that people are looking at that we didn't get to, so sorry about that. If we didn't talk about someone that that you wanted,
yeah, we did go through like 52 or 53 guys, whatever that list was. It was pretty gnarly. I think we got everyone just about covered. Extensive list. Go back and listen to it if you haven't already. It was episode 424. And this week is an interesting one because last week's game against Cal, USC and Cal, supposed to play this past Saturday, was postponed due to COVID. We're going to talk about it more in the news segment. So that's been pushed back, which means it was a sudden bye week, which gave us more time to let you guys listen to the Coaching Hires podcast. But this week, a little bit different because, Alicia, you are making yourself ineligible for the USC-UCLA preview episode that we're going to put out later this week. You're not going to be around for it.
Okay, can I blame BYU for this?
Why?
Because, like, I wasn't prepared for this being rivalry week. Like, I wasn't thinking about this being, like not that it would have changed my plans, but
Alicia, the BYU, like, scheduling contract thing came out, like, 6 years ago.
Yeah, I know, but realistically, USC-UCLA should be the last game of the season unless it's Notre Dame, and it's not Notre Dame this year, so it should be.
You know how many times it's been the last game of the season? Like, hardly ever.
Well, I feel like it should be the last game of the season. And
sure,
the fact that it's not
is
messing with me. So sadly, I will miss out on the Crosstown podcast with our great buddy Jake. And that will be very disappointing for me.
Way to bury the lead there.
But
Jake
yeah.
is going to fill in for you.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I jumped the gun there. Yeah. Jake is filling in for me for the Crosstown podcast. He will do an amazing job, as always, and I will be out of town.
Yeah, you're going to be on secret assignment,
mm-hmm.
A.K.A. going to visit my favorite city in the world without me.
You were invited, but as I told Jake, you have the palate of a 9-year-old. So
no,
the entire purpose of this visit to your favorite city in the world.
I have the correct palate.
I'm going out of town in order to do a food experience with my family that you were invited to, that you declined, along with several other significant others of my family members, because it would be a waste of a meal, because it might not appeal to you. That's what's really happening.
Yeah, you guys are going to have gross food. That's fine. and you're doing it on a rivalry week. That's fine too. You can just take the blame here.
I'm taking the blame.
You won't be here, but yeah. Jake will be. So we'll have Jake Merrifield from the What's Bruin show later on this week as we preview USC and UCLA again, the rivalry game Saturday at 1 p.m. So look forward to that later this week. And this episode will be a mailbag. But we got a bunch of news. Let's get to it up next. All right, let's start with the changes of USC's schedule. USC-Cal was supposed to be last week. That game has been moved to December 4th, which is Championship Saturday. USC and Cal, spoiler alert, not going to win their respective divisions. So, yeah, it guess it made sense to move it back to there rather than just having Cal forfeit and USC collecting a free win. SC's going to have to earn it, and they're going to need it to get to bowl eligibility. USC has 3 games remaining, UCLA, BYU, and then Cal. They've got to win 2 of 3 to go to a bowl game, so you would assume Cal's got to be one of those 3. Considering the difficulty of those 3 opponents, but either way, SC needs a win, and they could use one up in Berkeley on December 4th. Berkeley on December 4th is not Vegas. SC was hoping to be in Vegas that day, but alas, it's Berkeley.
Yeah, and it's just an extension of a season that didn't need extending, to be honest.
A little bit.
I don't know if it's going to change anything realistically for USC. I think the head coaching decision, we're going to talk about the timing on that.
I didn't think about this, but
I don't think it will actually impact that at all, because the timeline, I think, is not related to USC's schedule. It's related to the schedule of whatever head coach they identify as the guy.
Well, especially when you factor in that they've already fired Clay Helton, they don't have to do the firing and the hiring.
Yeah, if Clay Helton
just have to do the hiring.
What would be really interesting is if Clay Helton still had his job.
Yes.
Then it would be like, oh wait, so now you can't fire him the week before. How are you? What's the timing going to be on that? But it's not a factor. So no, that's fine.
Yeah. Other 2 new scheduling updates. SCUCLA, the city championship this Saturday, 1 p.m. at the Coliseum on Big Fox. Going to be Joe Davis, Brock Heward, and Bruce Feldman on the call. The Bruins are 6-4. They're already bowl eligible. They'll be looking to get USC held out of bowl eligibility. And I want to save this for later in the week. We're going to talk about it later in the week. But there's already some shots fired. Have you seen this quote from Bo Calvert, former USC commit Bo Calvert? This comes from Ben Bolch of the LA Times. UCLA linebacker Bo Calvert on playing USC last season with no fans. Quote, the energy was still there because you're playing against the little boys across the street. And then in a tweet from James Williams, it says, UCLA linebacker Bo Calvert referred to USC as the boys. The little boys across the street before stating, quote, they're up and down throughout the season. We're looking to put the final dagger in them this weekend.
Should UCLA really be talking?
I mean, these are the things that get said. I don't really care about these things, but surely SC should use them as bullet board material.
Bulletin board material.
Bulletin board, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, if we want to get technical, SC can use UCLA and still beat BYU and Cal and still be alive for a bowl game, even though we, I don't think that's exactly what Bo Calvert was referring to. But we'll talk about that later this week with Jake. SC and UCLA ramp it up. The Trojans did beat UCLA at the final moments last year. We'll see if they can use that mojo to continue and win again this year. And then the last game of the year, which was supposed to be against BYU, now it's against Cal. But Thanksgiving Saturday is going to be a night game against the BYU Cougars. The Cougars currently sit number 14 in the AP Top 25. They're 8-2. They'll be coming to the Coliseum at 7:30 p.m. on ESPN on next Saturday.
Yeah, and that could be an interesting matchup because I think Kalani Sitake should be a candidate for USC's head coaching job. So there's some...
And Washington's. Washington just fired Jimmy Lake. He should be a candidate there.
Yeah. So,
at Washington State, too. Yeah.
That game could end up being a big deal because, you know, Kalani Sitake potentially improves his stock as a coaching candidate if he beats USC. Even a down USC, if you beat USC at the Coliseum when you're BYU, I think you're adding to your resume.
Yeah, 100%. And then the other news nugget, the big one that we have to discuss. Over the weekend, 5-star cornerback Damani Jackson has decommitted from the Trojans. This is the corner out of Modern Day, the number 6 recruit in the country, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite, the number 2 ranked corner and the number 1 recruit in the state of California. Originally committed to USC back in January, and it's not looking good. I mean, not only did he decommit, but if you want to look at the crystal balls over on 24/7 Sports, I think these are 3 important big ones from Gerard Martinez of USCFootball.com, Steve Wiltfong from 24/7 Sports, their director of recruiting, and Hank South from Bama Online. All of them have crystal balled Damani Jackson to Alabama. This comes just 1 week after he visited Tuscaloosa for the Bammers' big win over LSU last week.
Yeah, and this hurts, but it was always inevitable. I think Damani Jackson not coming to USC is directly a reflection of USC holding on to Clay Helton for too long, because basically you've given the new head coach not enough time to secure this commitment. There's still a very, very slim chance that USC makes a big hire and Damani decides that he wants to stay home, but I can never, never, ever fault a dude for going to play for Nick Saban. So,
You
know, he's doing what's best for him and he has every right to do that. From a USC perspective, it is more important to have moved on from your head coach and make the right hire than to focus in on the recruits from this particular cycle.
Yeah, it's a tough pill to swallow, but that's the thing. You need to get the hire right more than anything else.
Yes, you were always going to screw over a recruiting cycle by firing your head coach. Just what happens. USC's problem is that they should have done this 2 years ago and screwed over 2 years ago's cycle, which already got screwed over anyways. But now that the cat's out of the bag, you just have to move forward. And you can... It sucks that Damani Jackson won't be playing for USC, presumably. But USC has bigger fish to fry at this point. There will be other top recruits that USC can turn things around with.
Yeah, as we've pointed out before, SC's hope here is that you hire a coach who allows those big names like Damani Jackson to pause and not actually sign. You know, he's not committed to Alabama as of now, but if that's the assumption of where he's going to go, you just want to hold off and not have him sign. If you go out and hire a big name coach that makes him consider SC, potentially pushing back on the early signing period from December, which is pretty much the standard signing period now, and pushing back to the late signing period, which is the old one, back in February. But we got a bunch of questions from the mailbag. Let's just get right to them.
You've got mail.
All right, Alicia, let's start with an email we got From my dad.
From Joe and Lomita?
Yeah, my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Geez, way to dox him, geez. hey, Michael and Alicia. Okay, after hearing the show on rating possible coaches, I think the Trojans should consider Whittingham, Campbell, Fickle, the Coastal Carolina coach, and sorry, Alicia, but Joe Brady as well. To me, the only problem with Brady is he had Joe Burrow at quarterback, and right now we are not truly sure about Jackson Dart. That's a big difference. For some reason, I think of Anthony Lynn as a possible choice, only because his post-game press conferences, he came off as being a guy who didn't point fingers at his team and seemed good in dealing with the media, even though, let's be serious here, the media in LA are all into the Rams. Could he handle the media heat as a USC coach is a big question. I think Lynn could probably relate to the college players. His demeanor could possibly cause players to buy into him. Wow, now that I'm thinking about it, wasn't Helton like that? Whatever happens, the hire has to give us all hope. Take care, your father / future father-in-law.
LOL. There was at the end of that.
Yeah, there was an LOL.
Thank you, Joe, for calling in. Yeah, I think that aside from my Joe Brady take, I'm sort of with you. I think there's reasons to hire a lot of these guys. I think there are always, every coach has their warts. Every coach has potential pitfalls that will get in the way. I think Anthony Lynn is another one of those guys that maybe he could relate to players and maybe he just needs another chance at this level. He wasn't terrible with the Chargers. He just didn't quite get them over the hump. So there was some good there. I think that's something. But the thing I wanted to talk about is the relation to Helton. Being able to have players buy into you is half the battle. And Clay Helton didn't have the other half, but he sure had that half. And, you know, you want that in your head coach. You want that paired with some tactical skill and some competitive understanding and all of that kind of stuff. But that is something that you do want to identify in a head coach. Buy-in is not easy. It's not simple. And that's what separates sometimes someone like Nick Saban, who everyone says isn't exactly the most like personable guy, but his players seem to love him. His players seem to respect him and have that buy-in. And that's the thing that makes a difference. So personality matters a lot less than the ability to get people on your side. And for someone like Helton, that was pretty much the only thing he had going for him.
Yeah. That was his thing. And it worked out. I mean, when you talk about guys like, you know, Brew McCoy, kind of the banner example of someone who transfers away and then transfers back because someone like Clay Helton would leave the door open for him.
Yeah.
Obviously, you wish that panned out differently as it stands, but, you know, a prime example of something. And no one's ever had an ill word to say of Clay Helton, the man, unless you're, you know,
crazy.
Someone who's never met him, right?
Yeah.
I think that you obviously, you want to hire someone who's a great tactical mind, who's a great coach, who's a great person. My thing is you can't overcorrect based on what you've already had.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of people that are like, oh, well, you hired a great guy. Well, why don't we hire an asshole next time? Like, that's not how it works. Like, don't overcorrect based on what you already had.
And going out and getting just somebody who tactically has it but doesn't have the persona or personality right. to be able to get guys on his side, that's going to end just as poorly.
Yeah, you want to find someone who checks all the boxes of what you're looking for. Those guys are out there, and it's about SC being able to figure out who that is. Let's go to a tweet we got from Casey. What's your best guess on who will be the next head coach at USC? At least you put on your predictor cap. Who you got? You got $5 to put on somebody for entertainment purposes only. Where are you putting it?
I believe that Dave Aranda is going to be the next head coach of USC. If I had to like put $5 or like my life savings or, you know, the chance of winning $1 million or something like that, I think that that's where I would cast my vote at this stage. Don't make it a confidence pick or anything like that, but right. I think that he's the guy. The more I think about it, the more I think that he's the guy.
If you're asking me who to pick, right now I'm in the Dave Aranda camp for sure.
Yeah.
Especially after this past week, the way that they bottled up Oklahoma. Like I put on Twitter, it really is incredible how Dave Aranda is like multiple candidates in one. You talk about the things that you like about Matt Campbell. Well, Dave Aranda can do those things. He's won with inferior talent. He's beaten Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. You talk about Brent Venables. You need a technical mind like Brent Venables. Well, Dave Aranda's won a national title as a defensive coordinator, too. That's a Brent Venables type. That's a Kirby Smart type, right? Like, look at those guys. So you can get multiple facets of what your multiple profiles within Dave Aranda. So, to me, if I was picking who I would, if I had the hiring power, I'm in the Dave Aranda camp right now. Who would be my best guess? Strictly based on past connections and probably maybe the odds on favorite, strictly because of the connection to Mike Bone, I'd say Luke Fickell for now. But I don't know anything. This coaching staff, administration is not talking. You don't hear any actual real leaks or anything. So you don't know where anyone is leaning. So this is all just a guess. And so if I had to put anything on this, I'd say the Bone connection to Fickell could matter. But who am I to say?
Yeah.
Don't read too much into that.
And quite frankly, the fact that the administration is not talking, is not leaking, is not interested in any of that is a very, very good thing, just for the record.
Yeah, and because of that, it could be Deion Sanders.
Yeah, who the hell knows?
Yeah. Tweet from Judy, what do you think is the most reasonable timeline for a coaching announcement? I know there are layers to this, but just ballpark it. Thanks and fight on. You mentioned it a few minutes ago. I think it depends on the coach. If it's a coach who is coaching right now, then it probably makes sense of when are they going to finish their regular season? When is there going to be an opportunity to do the actual interviews? When is there going to be the opportunity to do all those things and work from there? So if it's a Dave Aranda, well, is he going to play in the Big 12 championship game? Well, that pushes it a week back, right? And then is there going to be some days to interview him and somebody else or whatnot? So I don't know. I think at this rate, you got to start looking at, December 4th is the last game for SC. I would circle December 6th through the 10th as your money window for a hiring for USC.
Yeah. So if the hire is Dave Aranda, then look for it either on the 29th at the earliest, or I think maybe like that's the Monday after the last regular season game for Baylor.
Yeah.
And that would be pretty early, 29th to let's say the 13th at the latest, because you can't hire him much later than that because early signing day is that week.
Could you agree to terms with Aranda and then just not announce it until like the 5th, until after the season?
I would, if I had to say, the money week for a USC hire is between the 5th and the 11th. And sure. If I had to put money on it, I'd say, let's say by December 7th, on December 7th, USC will announce a head coach. That's the Tuesday. That's if it's Dave Aranda. If it's Luke Fickell, then you are...
It's basically the same timeline. I mean, he's going to play in the American Championship game, right?
It's the same timeline unless he's in the playoff. If he's in the playoff, I genuinely do not know how you find that out.
I think it would be the same thing. I think it would be the same
thing. You think he takes a job with a playoff game coming up? Actually, yeah, he would take... Yes, if you're USC, you have to make that hire. And if you're taking that job...
What are you going to do, wait?
Yeah, you can't wait. You have to... Basically, USC's best bet is sometime, let's say, before the 10th, you need to have your head coach ready to go because they need that weekend before the early signing period to get a head start and
ideally,
start calling people and get there. Well, and ideally what you do is you have by the 6th, you have the hire. You have a few days. Let's say by the 10th, you not only have the head coach, but you have the staff more or less put together. They need to start calling. They need to start getting in recruiting situations and start begging kids to wait to make their decisions, all of that kind of stuff. So if you wait until after the 10th to make this hire, if you don't make it by the 13th, you might as well wait until January. You might as well wait until you have NFL playoff coaches that you can look at, because once the early signing period's done, what are you going to do?
Yes, but this is still going to be a wild carousel because of the jobs open. UW is open. It's going to be open. LSU is going to be open. There's big jobs that are going to be open, and you might have to compete against those schools for somebody. You might get in a bidding war with somebody. And so I don't think that you can just completely just wait, because you need to still swing and get who you – because you're USC. You need to dictate this. There should be no one else that gets first pick based on who you want. You should be able to get who you want.
What if who you want is Luke Fickell, and he refuses to take a job until after the playoff, if he's in it?
How bad do you want him?
If he's your guy, you wait for him, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, yes.
But you wait for him with a handshake of, you're not going to screw us over by not taking this job now, buddy.
Sure,
you
but,
gotta do
but at
it.
That point, isn't he taking the job?
Well, if USC does not have a hire made by the end of December and Luke Fickell is in the playoff, then it will be an open secret.
And in that case, you start looking at NFL guys, too.
Yeah.
Then you're like, well, is Matt Rhule someone who gets fired in Carolina? Yeah. And Matt Rhule is someone we should have had on the list because, for me, he's a home run hire.
The moment that Matt Rhule becomes available, he becomes the home run hire in college football.
You go all in on Matt Rhule, yes. Yeah. Matt Rhule 2 years ago was my number one and still would be my number one. Why? Because he's turned around every single program he's been at. Temple, Baylor, under crazy circumstances.
And failing in the NFL does not matter that much
nothing.
When you've made your name as a college coach.
Yeah, means
see Nick
absolutely
Saban.
Absolutely nothing. Yeah. Moving on, let's go to a tweet from Alex. In light of the Domani Jackson news, what is the most impactful decommitment USC has had since the BCS era? I say DeAnthony Thomas.
It's Jalen Ramsey. It's Jalen Ramsey, and I will stand by that forever. It's Jalen Ramsey.
I don't disagree. I think Jalen Ramsey's probably the guy. I imagine him on that 2014 defense where you have Adoree Jackson, Jalen Ramsey, Sua Cravens, Leonard Williams.
Yeah.
Damn.
You could say that USC losing out on Manti Te'o was a pretty big deal.
Wasn't a commit, though.
He wasn't a commit. Yeah, he wasn't a decommit. But
Jackson was not a commit.
Yeah.
And I don't think DeSean Jackson changes much, to be quite honest with you. What does he change? I don't think he changes much for how everything panned out with SC.
Yeah.
I think you can make a strong argument that Manti Te'o changes things. Again, wasn't a commit. But Jalen Ramsey is surely one. At the same point, you look at his time at what it would have been at SC in 2013, 14, and 15. It was such a chaotic year. I mean, set of years with the Ed Orgeron thing, Kiffin getting fired, Sark getting fired midseason. I don't think he prevents any of that. And that's probably a very bad time for Jalen Ramsey to come anyways. So, he's the decommitment that hurt the most, I think. I think you're right. But in terms of the most impactful, I don't know.
All right, can you Z? And this is where my knowledge fails me. But was there anyone that USC could have used in 2008 that puts that team over the top?
The 2008 team?
The 2008 team. Who can you add to that 2008 team that didn't end up coming to USC? And I just don't know. Because if you want to talk about impactful, maybe you look at 2006, 2007, and 2008 were teams that USC could have won national titles.
I don't think SC lost any of those. Lost any of those national titles because of their personnel.
Because of it, or because of a specific decommitment. I can't think of one.
No.
I didn't follow recruiting very closely at the time.
The other one that we could add here is Vontaze Burfict.
Yeah, that was a big one.
You can add Burfict to this. You can then start to look at the quarterbacks now when you talk about Bryce Young and Matt Corral. Those are hard for me because...
Yeah.
I'm not saying that Bryce Young and Matt Corral are worse than what USC has right now, but...
I'm just not sure any of these... Like, USC's
quarterback situation has been so consistent no matter who the names are that I'm not sure that those guys would have panned out at USC, given how everything has been. And this has been something we've talked about before. You can say that JT Daniels would be better than Keaton Slovis, and... Sure, maybe, but he also would have been in a position to fail, just like Keaton Slovis is.
Yeah.
And Bryce Young would have been put in a position to fail, just like Keaton Slovis is. So, those are hard to gauge. Moving on. Tim says, with hindsight, Domani's decommitment and Mykel Williams earlier, do you think it was a bad idea to fire Clay Helton so early in the year? They don't have the ability to add to the class until they get a new coach, and they'll be playing defense with commits for close to 3 months.
This is hard because I don't know that it matters. Helton was not going to be able to recruit this fall very well anyways. Even if USC has a better record, which I think they probably end up having a slightly better record, he was a sitting duck. He was always going to be a sitting duck. And the timing on the firing was firing your head coach is never good for recruiting. It was always going to damage recruiting. That's just the way I see it. So would it have made a difference? Maybe, but maybe you just hold off Damani Jackson decommitting until, you know, mid-December, right before the early signing period.
When you have no time to pivot or anything?
Yeah, so
he becomes Jalen Ramsey?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is difficult because what did you need to happen from the firing? Was the most important thing that Clay Helton didn't earn another year? Because if that was the thing, then you needed to fire him when you did.
You know what could have helped recruiting just slightly? You fire Helton in week two. Dante Williams turns out to be an incredible interim head coach, and has a chance of getting the job. So recruits are still sort of on board for the few months, and then those relationships remain intact. Maybe that's the scenario, but realistically...
That happened a little with Ogeron as the interim. He rallied some recruits. But
then you risk alienating those recruits if you don't hire Dante Williams.
There's too
and
many
then,
pros and cons to all of these things that I don't think there's a solution.
The solution was firing Clay Helton in 2018. Let's be honest.
The solution was SC being willing to pay the buyout back then.
Yeah.
And making the decision then to fire him and deal with it and all that. And if, you know, the university would have been a different place, if Bowlen would have been around earlier, if
Lynn Swann hadn't gotten...
Yeah, like, there's all these moving parts that...
Outmaneuvered by Jimmy Sexton with that extension.
Yeah, that really is the best thing is that they needed to fire Clay Helton years ago and be willing to eat the money or never have to pay all that money, either way.
Yeah.
Let's go to LJ. Maybe I'm being a downer, but I feel like the Pac-12 is slowly feeling less like a Power 5 conference. What are some things the Pac-12 needs to do to change this? Maybe this is an unpopular opinion. I think it's on the schools. I think it's honestly on the schools. It's not the Pac-12's fault that Stanford is what Stanford is. It's not the conference's fault that ASU has not developed Jaden Daniels into something more than the guy who got Tempe. It's not the Pac-12's fault that SC is running a two-quarterback system that is putting both quarterbacks in harm's way and not, you know, developing their players and not capitalizing on the talent that they have, struggling to recruit, all those things. It's not the Pac-12's fault that that's happened. It's not the Pac-12's fault that Chip Kelly decided just not to recruit at UCLA and has struggled to win and has struggled to channel his prowess from a decade ago at Oregon. It's not the conference's fault that Jimmy Lake ended up not being the guy people thought he would be as a head coach. It's not the conference's fault that Nick Rolovich is a moron. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I understand that, you know, it's frustrating that these things always happen with the conference in general, but at some point, when are we going to start looking at, you know, start blaming the teams themselves? That's where the control is. And we talked about it so much, you know, a decade ago when they got the big money deal, which at the time was the big money deal in the country. Almost every school boosted all of their facilities. They built new workout centers and all that stuff. And so many schools upgraded their coaches. You look at Washington State, they went from Paul Wolf to Mike Leach, right? Arizona went from Mike Stoops to Rich Rod, a guy who had West Virginia on the brink of a national championship game, the godfather of the spread offense, right? The Pac-12 got better in terms of the coaching that was in this conference. And yet, what did they have to show for it? One playoff berth that hasn't been from Oregon. One, and that was Washington. And they lost, 24-7? So, like, and the only other playoff berth was Oregon in that first year? Like,
realistically, what the Pac-12 needs is for USC to get its shit together. The ACC would be talked about in the same way as the Pac-12 if Clemson hadn't dominated nationally for the last few years. Realistically, it's all about USC. If your premier brand is good, then you will be good.
More money would help. I just don't trust that.
But USC's problem is not
the schools to spend the money correctly anyway.
No, USC's problem is not the money, the revenue that the Pac-12 is or isn't bringing in. USC's problem has been decision-making, hires. So it really comes down to that. And, you know, USC and UCLA both have new ADs, and I think they're pretty well-respected, who I think I personally think that Bone and Jarman are committed
upgrades,
committed to football in a way that we haven't seen in a while. But, you know, what it takes is USC being good, Oregon staying good, and then ideally a third program to rise and be the team that's always hovering between 10 and 15. Because what you need, USC, I mean, the Pac-12 has the number three team in the country right now. So what you need is the number three. You need a number 8 or 9.
They have the best player in the country.
Yeah, they have the best player in the country.
Kayvon Thibodeau,
yeah.
Right?
So the perception of the Pac-12 would be considerably helped if you had Oregon at Oregon or USC or whoever, a team at number 3, a team at number 8, and a team at number 13. And the Pac-12 had that for a little while with Oregon, USC, Washington, Stanford, Washington, you know, Oregon.
Yeah, early teens.
Yeah, there's been three team combos in the Pac-12. USC is not holding up its end of the bargain to be that third team. And ASU, Utah, UCLA, Washington, they're not holding up their end of the bargain to be that third team either. So right now, the only team in the Pac-12 pulling its weight in football is Oregon. And they're barely doing that.
Yeah. Now, mind you, more money would help people, you know, be able to spend more resources on things. Absolutely.
Yeah, but money wasn't...
I just don't trust the schools to spend the money correctly when they've tried that before and it didn't pan out.
Money wasn't why Washington hired Jimmy Lake. They just got that wrong. Money
and,
wasn't...
And we all liked Jimmy Lake. Like we thought that Jimmy Lake was...
No one thought Jimmy Lake was a terrible hire when the hire was made, but sometimes
Chip Kelly
you miss.
Was an amazing hire for UCLA. It
and
just
sometimes
didn't
you
out.
Miss. Yeah. So,
So even when Pac-12 schools are making the right decisions. Some of them just have not panned out. And
well,
and I know it's easy to blame Larry Scott for that, but
the one thing,
not everything is Larry Scott's fault.
The thing is, George K, I think, is coming in, and they are talking about the little tweaks that can happen that can make it a little bit easier for the for your teams to be good. Changing the schedule.
But you need to be better pushing in general for a playoff, for those things to really matter.
But those things don't matter unless USC starts being good. So.
Yeah. And UW and UCLA.
Yeah.
And Oregon continuing to be good. All those.
Or Stanford or Cal or Oregon State. Or just, you need somebody. It doesn't matter who it is. Somebody needs to come up and be the team that plays off of Oregon and USC, ideally.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Let's go to JNA 5993. Assuming USC gets the next head coach right, how long do you think it will take him to rebuild the program into national relevance? This is an interesting question because I think I have one question right back to you. Is this coach going to do a teardown? Is this coach going to do the thing that Chris Peterson did at UW, where he, you know, a bunch of guys, there was a lot of attrition, guys were kicked off the team, guys figured out that the culture was not for them, and in and out and a bunch of stuff? Because if that happens, it might there might be another year of going like 6-6 or something. You know, Nick Saban went 6-6 in his first year at Alabama. The hope would be that you see signs of improvement while that happens. But then things all come together. Or is the coach going to come in and say, hey, there's still talent on this roster. There's still, you know, elite talent when you look at guys like Corey Former, who's the number one recruit last year. And so can you just build off of this? So I think there's a chance. I think what makes this better for anything for USC is that there is no dominant team in the Pac-12. As much as Oregon's been the dominant team in the Pac-12, watch Oregon on a weekly basis. Are they the dominant team on the football field week in and week out? No. Not always.
They're always vulnerable.
So, yeah, I think SC can come in here and, you know, win 9 games next year, even if there is attrition. And luckily, this is the landscape of college football now where there is sort of free agency, where you can get transfers, where you can get guys to come in and all those things that you didn't have available 10 years ago.
Okay. Some may disagree with me, but I think that if USC gets the next coach right, and that's the parameters, they should be able to win the Pac-12 by year two. I think that they should be able to get to the playoff, or at least in the playoff discussion. I'm talking, you know, you're the one that gets left out by year 3, maybe 4. But I would not expect national relevance in the sense of being able to compete with Nick Saban's Alabama.
Yeah, what do you consider national relevance? Is national relevance competing for a playoff spot?
No. Well, national relevance is competing for a playoff spot, I think. I think that USC wants to be nationally relevant, but you also want to then take that next step to being able to win 2 playoff games, which means winning a national title. And I think USC realistically probably is 5 years out from that.
Because you need
to start stocking the trenches with elite talent.
Yeah, I would say that SC's probably 5 years away from maybe competing against Alabama and Georgia.
Yeah.
On that level.
Yes. But can they get to the playoff before then? I think so.
Well, yes. Especially since when you look back at how far away is SC from putting together a year like 2017?
They shouldn't be that far away.
2017, they finished, what, 7th in the poll before the playoff was set, and people were making arguments that morning on why SC should be included. Ones that we didn't believe in, buy into, but like you could make, you know, weird arguments.
2017,
right?
Without the blowout losses, you can maybe make those arguments.
Right. But like SC should be able to get to 2017 level pretty quickly. And 2017
within 3 years
was still on the cusp of being a playoff contender.
Because realistically, the transfer portal makes this all a little bit more wonky.
Yeah.
But it can work in your favor as well as work against you. But let's just say USC has the new coach comes in and rebuilds some trust around USC. You get you're only ever two recruiting classes away from really really competing, I think.
Yeah. The good thing is you don't have to have the elite offensive lineman to win the Pac-12.
Yes, exactly. That's my point. And to win the Pac-12.
And you win the Pac-12, you're going to be a playoff contender.
Exactly.
So, let's go to a tweet from Michael. Great name, by the way. In honor of Jackson Dart, what other young players do you want to see get more game action, whether it be rationally or irrationally?
Is there anyone in particular?
Michael Jackson III.
That was my thought. I'd like to see USC just try some stuff with the linebackers because I'm just so not enthused by USC's linebacker play in general. So maybe Rayshon Davis.
Yeah, I don't hate that pick. It's a good one. Tweet from Maybe Peanut. How would you guys feel if Spencer Rattler transferred to USC? Oklahoma quarterback who's been benched for Caleb Williams.
He'd be a backup to Jackson Dart.
I have two thoughts here. One, doesn't ASU kind of make sense?
Yeah.
If Jaden Daniels goes pro or something like that?
Yeah.
Or Arizona. He's from Phoenix, that's why. Secondly, I don't think it matters. I think that SC's problem is not who the quarterback is. It's how the quarterback is coached up.
Yes.
And even next year, if it's Slovis and Dart, I think either one of those guys could win you a ton of games if you put them in a position to succeed.
Yes.
So
I don't know that he changes USC's fortunes in any positive or negative way.
Yeah. For sure.
Unless he's willing to come be a backup, and then USC has a really good backup to work with.
Yeah, and I'd rather SC fix the other holes than just go out and find a quarterback who could be that game changer.
Yep.
I know that quarterback's the easy thing that feels good to fix, but like I'd rather you have a year in which everything else was good and you had like a game manager back there than that being the missing piece that you solve early.
Yep.
A tweet from Bloating. Or B-loading. B-loading? What do we think? B-loading sounds better than bloating, for sure. What's more likely, Keaton staying for a senior year or entering the portal? Or as Gerard Martinez from USCFootball.com would say, the porthole.
This is interesting because there will be a new head coach. There will be a new offensive coordinator. I wouldn't be surprised if Keaton transferred. But he doesn't have to transfer because there is a new sheriff in town. I wouldn't be surprised if he sticks around for spring, gets a view of what his prospects are, and then leaves over the summer. But I don't know. That's hard to say.
Yeah, I don't know what's... I think entering the transfer portal is probably more likely, but I could see anything at this point.
Yeah, either way.
It's going to be who gets hired and who can build a relationship or not quickly. Let's go to an email we got from a different Joe. Can we leave Graham Harrell on the tarmac after this game? This email came from the ASU game. I'm sick of watching him call this offense Joe in the Mitten, seemingly Michigan, meat chicken. Alicia, I understand the hate on Graham Harrell at this point. I think we all know that this offense is not the right one for USC to be running. As constructed right now, I'm not anti-air raid. I'm anti whatever USC is trying to do at this moment. But if you fire Graham Harrell, who's running the offense? Mike Jenks? Like you're not fixing anything.
Firing Graham Harrell isn't going to change the system. It's not going to change anything really. So you just have to roll it out. Like nothing about this team is fun to watch. I'm sick of watching this whole team. So you know, if you get to that point, then stop watching the games. That's that's the solution. Not USC firing anyone else because it's pointless.
100%. Let's go to a voicemail we got from Michael in Iowa. Not Idaho. Iowa.
Hey, guys. This is Michael in the 563, which, by the way, Michael is Iowa, not Idaho. You relapsed, but that's all right. No big deal. God, I hate listening to NF poorly played football. And I feel sorry for you guys because you actually have to watch it as well. Being blind, I only have to listen to it. But I gave up. But once that last, it was 26-18, I think, when I turned it off. I just couldn't handle it anymore. I almost felt like I was going to be sick. But like you guys said about a week ago, you know what? This goes with the season. We just have to eat the whole elephant and not even get emotionally involved and turn the page and hope next year's better. And I kind of feel sorry for the highly touted recruits who decided to come to SC. They must be wondering what the hell kind of choice did I make in this instance. But I hope they hang in there. I would hate to see Foreman and maybe some of the few really good ones that we have hit the transfer portal. But yeah, this is so disgusting. It's not even worth getting angry about. But I, like I say, I feel sorry for you guys because at least I don't have to visually watch it. So hang in there. Right on. The light at the tunnel at this point appears to be a train. But hey, we'll get there. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call as always, Michael. And you know what? I don't know. Consuming this team in any form, whether you're watching it or listening to it or, I don't know, reading about it or anything like that, none of it's fun. So it feel for you, feel for all of us. Yeah, there's just nothing nice to say.
Yeah, it is what it is, which is a phrase that I hate, but
it's almost over. Like, well, we're seriously,
it is almost over.
It's three more weeks of this.
Yeah.
And in that time, the coaching stuff is going to heat up, so we'll have something to occupy our thoughts before that.
Yeah, 100%. Let's go to a voicemail from another Joe, a big Tottenham fan, Joe.
Hey, Michael and Alicia. I know the season's already started, but I have a preseason question regarding basketball. How come every single year we never start ranked? I mean, we've beaten UCLA, what, three or four straight times. We return a decent amount of the roster, and we have some pretty good recruits and graduate transfers or regular transfers that come in basically every year. I realize not having Evan Mobley is what a lot of people see, and they're going to be like, oh, USC, there's no way they can do as good or better without – what looks like maybe the next Anthony Davis. But like UCLA, they went one round further in the tournament than us, and they start number two. I know they return like 90% of their roster or whatever, but like for USC to like not even like really sniff like 25, 24, you know, the very tail end of the rankings, it's getting annoying. I mean, this is almost a regular 20-win program over the last, what, 4 years or so. It's annoying. But anyways, glad to start 2-0. Not glad to see Temple erase the 25-point lead and bring it to a 5-point lead at the very end, but it was a lead, so we won. So that's what matters. But, I'm excited about basketball, especially since there's not much else to be excited about besides, I suppose, women's soccer, which is pretty cool, actually, but not exactly on my radar most of the time. Anyways, fight on. Hope you guys are both doing very well, and thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, as always, Joe. I think this is a good question about SC not getting the benefit of the doubt in preseason polls, because what have we heard every single offseason? Oh, this is an SC team that could be Andy Enfield's most talented ever. We hear that every single year. And I understand, yeah, like Evan Mobley isn't on this team. But the thing about Andy Enfield is that he recruits beyond his resume, right? Isn't that the thing about Andy Enfield?
Yes.
Is that there's talent on this roster. So why doesn't the talent ever get the benefit of the doubt? And my assumption would be because SC has not done itself any favors and not made the tournament on the regular year after year after year. They do this thing where they're a bubble team when they probably shouldn't be, or They, you know, last year was sort of an outlier based on what SC has done. Like, SC reached their potential last year, but they never do. And when you don't do that, and when you're not a team that people associate as the basketball brand, people are not going to give you the benefit of the doubt. Whereas UCLA played, didn't they play the play-in game last year? They barely made the tournament. And yet they go to the Final Four. And because they look good in the tournament, because everyone is, you know, assumes that they're well coached, which they are. Mick Cronin's a good coach. And because they brought back all their talent, and because they're UCLA and they have those four letters next to their name, it's very easy to put them number two.
Yeah, and don't underestimate the power
of... That's not a knock on them. They should probably be number two.
No, don't underestimate the power of the brand of UCLA versus USC. You see the same thing in football. USC always gets rated probably ahead of where they should be because USC football has a brand that's just going to benefit them in terms of your perception of that program. And yeah, Andy Enfield, I think, still has a lot of things to prove. I think that you hit the nail on the head when you said that USC is too often a bubble team when they should be. You know, they should be a perennial, you know, between 5 and 8 seed.
Right.
And they're too often the play in 8 or, you know, 9. So if every year USC was not waiting on Selection Sunday, crossing fingers and hoping and praying that things will go their way, it might feel a little bit different. And last year last season was awesome. It was really great to see. But when you have the number 3 pick in the NBA draft, and Evan Mobley is absolutely rocking it in the NBA right now, I think that a lot of voters might look at that and say, well, that was all Evan Mobley. Now, it was a lot Evan Mobley. I think it was a lot other guys, too. And those guys are going to have their opportunity to prove themselves. But you got to build up that trust, I think. And personally, Andy Enfield doesn't have that trust from me because I'm so used to this team is super talented. They're still going to be holding their breath on Selection Sunday. And that's frustrating. So it just happens.
Yeah. The good thing about this is the rankings did come out on Monday, the new rankings for week 2 of the college basketball season, and SC's ranked.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, 2 relatively good wins. The Temple game, I didn't watch, but I saw at halftime, I got the score alert. Oh, USC's blown them out. Sweet. Talking with Kenneth Martin, about how, like, wait, you know, this team's looking pretty good. And then I get the final score alert. I'm like, wait, what happened? Someone explain it. So it's those kind of moments. And again, I didn't see the game. It's straight up. So I can't say that, like, I'm an expert on what happened, but it's those kinds of things that make me so skeptical of Andy Enfield. Like,
right.
He's such a great recruiter.
Yeah, SC, to me, it comes down to SC doesn't have the benefit of the doubt historically, and they haven't earned the benefit of the doubt despite going to the Elite Eight last year. That was seen as an anomaly when that should be a more regular sort of occurrence. And I'm not saying that they need to go to the Elite Eight every year. This is USC, and I get it. But, like, the Sweet 16, I don't think is a crime to ask for a little bit more often. And looking at the preseason rankings, yeah, SC was 28th in the preseason AP poll, and so now they're 25th. So they moved up 3 spots, but they're actually in the poll now, for sure. Last call. Let's go from Dan in Valley Village.
Hey, it's Dan from Valley Village. I realize that I am just too exhausted to talk about how frustrating this team is and the stupidity of some of the play calling. So I'd rather turn to something more positive and more exciting. I wanted to ask how the wedding planning's going. Love you guys. Fight on.
Thanks for the call, Dan. And thanks for the reminder that we got to do that.
Yeah. We don't ask a lot of our listeners. Maybe, you know, drop in a review and just be nice to your fellow humans. But if you have any prayers or positive thoughts to share with a couple of procrastinators who are planning a wedding that is now 6 months away, pray for us.
Less than that.
Yeah. Also, if everyone can start doing their not rain dances, because right now we're planning an outdoor wedding, and quite frankly, it really, really, really is important that it doesn't rain. I don't care if there's rain on my wedding day in terms of, like, rain on your wedding day, whatever. I don't care. The wallets will care.
Until you look at the bill.
Until like, you look at the bill oh difference God, between yes, a rain matters. Wedding and a not rain wedding. So yeah. Everyone can just start crossing their fingers for that, please. That would be very nice. But, you know, I feel like we are very, very fortunate in that both of our mothers are available to help us with the planning sort of stuff. And Michael, your mom, Karen, has been amazing. She's helping us
She's
a lot.
She's doxing both my parents today?
I know. I love your parents. Karen and Joe are wonderful. I'm very honored to be on the way to becoming their daughter-in-law.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. We don't have to go.
I might like your parents more than you do, so, you know.
We're all sentimental here.
but seriously, we are very grateful to them and to our families for being able to help us with all these things. It's just that I don't think Michael and I are, like, the people that you would pick to plan a wedding. So it's going to, yeah, this is going to be interesting. This is going to be very, very, very nerve-wracking because there's a lot that needs to get planned still.
Yeah.
But we'll do it. We'll figure it out.
At some point.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, I mean. There's
tomorrow.
Always the
we'll
courthouse.
Do it tomorrow.
There's the courthouse.
Yeah. The number of times that we've spent like an hour doing something and then it's like, you know, just, you know, Vegas is right there. Like, it's yeah. Not that hard.
four hours, really, if you speed. So.
Yeah.
Which we would not be doing.
Ever. No.
Ever. Absolutely
no.
Not.
Yeah. No.
So. Anyways, that's going to wrap up this episode. Thanks for listening. As always. Send us your questions, emails, and all that.
And if we're going to just be all sentimental and stuff, speaking of Jake, who's going to be on the episode later this week, Jake and Sarah, his wife, doxing her have been very helpful with our early stages of wedding planning, too. So just shout outs all around.
Yeah, 100%. And you guys will listen to Jake later in this week. So send us your emails that you got for me and Jake to discuss, emails, calls, all that. Later this week as we preview USC and UCLA. Oh, final thoughts? Quick. Do you want to throw? No, actually, we'll have you call in and leave a voicemail on the rant line.
I will
with your
leave
prediction.
A rant line voicemail with my prediction and some thoughts on the UCLA game. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. All right. See you.
See you.